Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins. We are here on Love Sport Radio, and what a pleasure it is this evening because we have very, very special newcomer, Charlotte Robson, joining us in the studio. Charlotte from the True Faith podcast, and we have Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine, and Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport. What a panel we have in the studio. You three lighting it up. We may have a lot of squad depth on the Newcastle Fan Show, but we might just be working with the A team tonight. I really hope Laurie, Jim and Sean aren't listening to that opener. But there we have it. I've said it is out in the ether. What a show we have tonight. We're going to be reviewing the game against Chelsea on the weekend. I was thinking, hoping Newcastle would get another special result in London. Wasn't to be this time, but they played well. I don't think they played terrible. We're going to be across that game. We're going to have a very special guest joining us, so you want to stay around for that. I will reveal all later, and we're going to be looking at the game on the weekend to Wolves. But as always, you can get involved. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 70 20 558, and we will endeavour to get through all your questions because this is your show, your team, your voice. We have to start at the very top. It is the game against Chelsea on the weekend, and where better to start with our very special newcomer, Charlotte. Welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show and joining us tonight. What did you make of the game?
I didn't think it was that bad.
I agree.
Obviously, we didn't get anything from it. I thought up to about 65 minutes we might frustrate a point out of them. We did not. They around that mark started pushing really hard, putting too much pressure on, and defensively I think we're pretty sound, but against a team like that we just couldn't keep them out. So that's sort of what I made of it. I was pretty impressed with this. It's just I think the key theme from it, and I think will be a problem going forward, we don't have any attacking threat and nobody's linking up, that we're not creating any chances. We had zero shots on target. That's a massive problem, and goal difference is going to scupper us, I think.
It could play a massive part. I couldn't have summarised it better myself, Ketch. When Charlotte talks about it, I felt like Newcastle, I don't want to say really well, but did defend well at times. They kept Chelsea out for, you know, nearly the entirety of the game. Chelsea did get a very late goal. Defended well. It's just going forward, not necessarily where's the creativity, but it does worry me where the goals are going to come from. And in any league, in any football game, you need to score goals to compete. You can only ever keep a team out for so long, especially when it is Chelsea. But you did run into a better side on the day. Is the goal scoring and the creativity now starting to be a bigger worry than it was?
Yeah, massive problem. I mean, what we've learned from the first nine games is there's no goals in this team. We've sold 58% of our goals. Well, sold Perez and let go of Rondon. So that's a big, you're going to take a big hit on that. And I don't see anyone in the squad capable of getting into double figures. I think we've got three. There's definitely something there up front. The three we've got up front, I like them individually. ASM, Joe Linton and Almiron, they all want to play on the left. That's the problem. So there's, and I don't even think it's a question of they're not clicking as a three. I just think the team are too deep. We're not getting high enough up the pitch. We can't judge Joe Linton because he's had no chances. He maybe had half a chance at Norwich. He had a chance at Tottenham, which he tucked away. A little header at Arsenal. I can't think of much else. So we can't criticise him. We can't judge him because we're not laying chances on. It's a big worry. We're far too deep. We're not getting high enough up the pitch. And when we're counter-attacking, we're not doing it in the numbers that we saw under Rafa. There would be, you know, blitzes going forward with people running off, the wing-back getting forward. And I'm wondering if it stems down to fitness. There's no leg
don't
really
start
in this
the
team.
Chronic fatigue again.
Well, what I'm worried, we controlled Chelsea, restricted them, but as the game went on, you could feel the goal coming, and I think that was a bit of tiredness. And when we're breaking on the counter attack, I don't see the energy and the and you know what we saw. The brilliant thing about Matty Longstaff was the energy that he brought to Man United. We don't really have enough Matty Longstaff's in the team to get up the pitch and support those three up front.
Yeah, well, Matty and Sean both starting again together in the team. That looks like now that could be a staple of this team going forward. It is a worry. Ketch just said there, 58% of the goals have gone. They've left this team. Great stat from Ketch there. But where are the goals going to come from? Because you mentioned that, you know, we can't really blame the man, the record man, the transfer fee that was paid for him. It's also about a lack of service as well, isn't it, Aaron?
Yeah, completely, and I agree with Ketch said. I don't think you can really judge Joel Linton on what we've seen so far because, you know, he's looked brilliant at holding the ball up because that tends to what he does for 70% of the game. So, I mean, at Anfield, you know, he looked just so far away from all his other attacking players. Almiron was just 40 yards away from every time he tried to break. It was the same case again, and I think even when he came in, you know, people who have watched him in the Bundesliga said he's not a natural goal scorer. You know, he's not going to get you 20 goals a season like Rondon would. He's more of a sort of a Firmino type where he'll link up the play, and when we're not getting players forward like that to bounce off him, then it, you know, he is probably going to be a waste of money. You know, Almiron still hasn't scored, which, you know, I think some are finding a concern. I think he needs to get one under his belt and hopefully they'll start coming. Saint-Maximin looks good going forward, yeah. But we don't really know what he's like in front of goal. You know, he's brilliant at taking players on, and, you know, he looks like he will be a type of sort of Ben Arfa player who's going to chip in, but is he going to be able to, you know, carry 15 goals like Rondon would? No. Like Perez would? No. So it is a massive worry, and especially when, you know, we've spent 60 million on the attack alone in the over summer, and the goals are the problem, not the defence.
Afterwards, Steve Bruce said after the game, Charlotte, he said, you know, well, we didn't create enough. You know, our crosses weren't the right ones. Our final passes in the third weren't the right ones. But our next run of fixtures, we play teams in and around us, and these are the games we should be picking up points. He's got a fair point in looking at those fixtures, but you can't necessarily write off the fixture you've just played afterwards and go, oh, well, I'm not saying he was making it a free hit or a free pass, but you need to be trying to get points from this game as well and not just looking at the games in and around you.
Yeah, 100%. And also, we haven't, like, if you look at the other teams in and around us that we've already played, we've not picked up any points from them. So you can't just be like, oh, well, we're playing more of our type. I think Wolves are a much hungrier side than us. That's what we've got coming up on Sunday. I don't think that's a easily winnable game. I don't think you can say that any of these fixtures are. And that, yeah, writing it off is just sounds stupid to me. It just sounds like not looking at the game critically at all.
Yeah, there's a fine line, you know, because obviously Steve Bruce is setting out this side, setting out this team, Ketch, you know. He obviously wants to get a point if he can, but sometimes there's an argument I've heard this week, you know, they want Newcastle to make more of a go for it, maybe throw caution to the wind, and then obviously the narrative that comes with that, though, you're more likely to concede two or three goals, but you want Newcastle to just be maybe more aggressive, you know, try to take the scruff of the game a little bit more, Ketch. When you are, I know you're nodding as like, are you mad, are you even asking me this, but in a sense that when you're going away to places like Chelsea, Spurs and all that, instead of sitting back waiting to counter attack, because you obviously can lose a lot that way.
Yeah, we get it, you know, you can't go away to Chelsea and Tottenham and go for 4-3-3. It's not pragmatic, and that's not what we want to do. But we're Newcastle fans, we're sucker for flair players, you know. I grew up watching the entertainers. Of course, when we're at home, I want us to be, to quote Steve Bruce, on the front foot. And I think this is where he's got to do it now. We've got Wolves at home. We haven't scored enough goals. He's got this amazing front three that's cost, you know, nearly £100 million. Let's get forward. Let's supply them. Let's get the atmosphere up and try and get a goal against Wolves, who will be coming into the game a bit fatigued. They're in Bratislava tomorrow night, and then they've got to come up to us, and then they've got a cup game through the week. So that's a busy team. It's going to be a test of their squad depth. So this is a massive opportunity. And the three worst performances of our season have been against the likes of Norwich, Watford and Brighton. Two of those games were at home. So
Teams in and around you.
You talk exactly. About teams we've got to pick up points against. We've played worse against those teams. So he really he needs to get something from this game, and at least a point, and it needs to be positive. He needs to get the fans going.
Well, always on this show, we have to mention Mike Ashley in some capacity, and obviously what's going on there. You know, there's been a lot of to and fro with him and Rafa Benitez, the articles that come out, and Rafa obviously posted something before the season started or around that time, and he had his say on it more. He obviously said that, you know, Mike Ashley never really made an attempt to keep him. Ashley said he did. But now Yap Stam has come out and said that he was approached, was it way back in March maybe, about the potential job, so that obviously we would have to believe that he had no intention of keeping Rafa in the position. Aaron, what have you made of this, what Jep Stam had to say?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we were told before the season started that Bruce was meant to be 11th choice on the shortlist, which Ashley came out and denied to the
He made the first team of candidates.
Yeah. It's snuck in, yeah. But, I mean, it sort of came out the blue, the Jep Stam thing. But even Jep Stam, I think, he's only been at Reading, you know, in England so far as a manager, and I think a lot of fans probably would have taken him over Bruce purely because it might have been something new and, you know, maybe a bit of an unknown quantity, whereas we knew what we were getting with Steve Bruce. We were getting a manager who hasn't managed in the Premier League for 5 years, hasn't been appointed to a Prem team in a decade. So, I mean, it is interesting to see that managers were getting approached. I think, you know, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has said he was maybe, you know, being in touch with it as well. So, I think it's just affirming what a lot of Newcastle fans knew. Mike Ashley can say that Bruce was, you know, the man he wanted, but it's clear to see he wasn't.
But a lot of the problem is, and correct me if I'm wrong, whoever was hired, though, it's under Ashley, they're going to face the same problems. And this isn't a manager choice for the Newcastle fans. You know, it's Mike Ashley, it's, you know, the way he wants to run a team, buy the players that he wants to buy. You know, if any manager come in, they're going to be faced with the same problems. Am I right, Ketch?
Yeah, well, I think what you saw happen in the summer was the club reached out to a number of managers, people like Sam Allardyce, Michael O'Neill, Van Bronckhorst was mentioned, Roberto Martinez, Vieira, Arteta. The club reached out to them. There would have been a little conversation between the club and their agent in which the terms of a managerial contract would have been spelled out, and I think those managers would have went, not for me, and then we start to get further down the shopping list, and then until you arrive at someone who will accept the job or snap your hand off for the job, and that was Steve Bruce. So I think it didn't get to a serious stage with anyone who had any managerial credentials.
Well, we have had a message on YouTube, and I said that this was the A team. I've been proved wrong because someone said, "Where is Sean? Get Sean back." So that was from Geordie Viewer. Probably Sean himself. Account, Sean.
Yeah. Sean's mum.
Yeah, Sean's got many burner accounts on YouTube, Twitter, and WhatsApp. We're expecting to hear from them from over the show. But like I said, we are hearing from a very special guest, and they're up next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and newcomer, and a welcome newcomer, that Charlotte Robson from the True Faith podcast. If that wasn't enough, if that wasn't the strongest lineup we can give to you, we have now been joined by Christian Hennage, all the way from Newcastle, from New York, but he is a Newcastle fan. Christian, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of time this evening. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show. We want to talk about a whole host of things, but obviously the result on the weekend, not the greatest one.
No, it wasn't, and it was painfully expected, I think. I'm quite apathetic towards this season in general, but I do feel like I've seen that game play out a number of times where it's pretty stout defence for 40, 50, even 60 minutes, and then one mistake, they've scored a goal, and then it's a case of just counting down the minutes until it's all over.
Christian, it's Ketch here. Good to speak to you.
Lovely to speak to you, mate.
Yeah, I was just wondering, as you're based in New York, I was wondering, have Newcastle inherited a load of Atlanta fans now that Almiron's come over to us and is not setting the Premier League alight, but he's setting something alight, the pitch alight maybe when he runs. But have we got a new influx of MLS fans, because we could do with some?
Fans is an interesting word. I think curious observers is a better definition for them. I think their season has been a bit up and down as well, so there's part of them thinking, God, we could do with him right now. And I think his struggles, as you kind of alluded to there, have kind of painted that picture a little bit as well. He's not maybe performed quite as he would have hoped, I think, more than anything, as some of those Atlanta fans you talked about would have expected either. So I think it's been difficult for both parties to kind of adjust to Miguel Almiron not being in Atlanta anymore.
Hi, Kristen. It's Aaron here. We've spoke earlier on the show about Joe Linton, and obviously, you know, Almiron hasn't really hit his stride yet, and neither has Joe Linton. What have you made of him so far, and do you think that, you know, we can't judge him yet, and how do you see his season sort of playing out alongside St Maximum and Almiron?
I think Joe Linton's a fascinating one because he's a bit like Almiron last season coming in with Benitez. He's gone from a highly technical, detail-orientated coach in Nagelsmann to Steve Bruce, who I don't think anyone will disagree with me when I say he's very much old-school, go-and-get-him, lads. There's not a lot of stuff written down on his paper when he goes to talk to the team. I think he's been okay in parts. There's probably some chances I would have liked Joe Linton to take. But I think the problem he's got at the minute is he's trying to build some kind of bond with Saint-Maximin and Almiron. And as we saw last season, Almiron was great with Rondon. I thought those two, along with Perez, worked really well in tandem. They just all had a really complementary skill set, whereas I haven't quite seen that same sort of range of talent with Joe Linton. I think he's a very different player to Rondon. He's not a stereotypical target man despite his size. And he can do it occasionally, but not with the sort of nous and cleverness that I think Rondon brought. And then you throw Saint-Maximin in there, who again is another one of these players where you listen to everyone in France and it's, yeah, he's talented, but he's inconsistent and he can be a little bit wild. And I think we've seen the talent. We've absolutely seen the talent early doors. But how do we actually get those three to work together and create chances for each other? That's the major concern I've got this season. I don't think defensively we're a nightmare. I think we're pretty solid on the whole. But when it comes to the final third, there's just no fluency, there's no understanding. And I think where Steve Bruce comes in is there's no plan either. We're not really putting crosses in. We're not really doing anything that seems quite nuanced and detailed. It's just get it into the final third and see if someone can produce a bit of magic.
Hi, Kristen. It's Charlotte. Thank you for joining us. I want to know, you have you said you were apathetic towards this season. Obviously, you've sort of kept one eye on it because that's all been quite concise. Is that because of Steve Bruce's appointment or has that been building for some time? Why did that come about?
It's a great question. I think, honestly, yeah, largely because of Steve Bruce's appointment, because I think for the first time with Rafa Benitez, there was a big part of me that could sort of sit there and say, you know what, this guy's got a plan. He knows where he wants his football club to go, and he actually sees some kind of potential in the mess that we can often witness as fans. And when he went, I just thought, okay, now even he doesn't believe in it anymore. He thinks there's better options out there. And we can sit and debate the validity of did he go to China for the money. It's not really the issue. The issue is he left and he didn't see a potential in Newcastle anymore.
Well, is that fair? I don't know if that's fair. He didn't. I think he wasn't given the opportunity to realise any potential at Newcastle. I don't know if he didn't see potential at Newcastle.
That's fair. Maybe I misspoke a little bit. What I mean by that is he doesn't see the current ownership or the guise of those in charge giving that potential to him.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, there will always be a potential in the club, absolutely. As an institution, it will always have that potential. But right now, it's not changing anytime soon. Yeah, we'll sign Saint-Maximin, we'll sign Joe Linton, but they're purchases to make a profit. They're not a sudden change of heart from those in charge. And I think the fact that it was followed by Steve Bruce, when we had guys like Giovanni van Bronckhorst talking of an interest, Yap Stam a little bit further down the line, people that were a little bit more modern, a little bit more progressive, and the ownership still went out and thought, you know what, Steve Bruce is the guy for us. Someone who statistically, not to sound too much of a nerd, but statistically is a very poor Premier League manager. And you just think, what am I choosing to invest sort of myself into here? The older you get, I think it can be harder sometimes to maintain that connection with your football club.
Christian, you just called Yap Stam a progressive manager. Would there have been not uproar on the terraces at Newcastle if they would have hired a manager that was just managing in the Championship, also with Reading, and didn't really do a good job? Hence why he was fired. Could there we been moaning at that also?
The problem you've got with Yap Stam is he's got a fairly small record, and it's very polarising. So the first season, they get into the playoffs. And yeah, it's pretty tedious at times. I'm sure Leeds called him all sorts for playing pretty boring football. And then the second season goes pretty poorly, definitely. But I think, you know what? I'd almost rather take that risk with someone who's a bit different than knowing what I'm getting with Steve Bruce, which is someone that his achievements, if you will, are a long time gone. That good season with Sunderland, I mean, the fact he managed Sunderland, the fact he turned the club down a few times, those are all separate issues. Just as a manager, his achievements are a long time gone, and the Premier League has evolved massively since those occasions.
But with the Amsterdam and Van Bronckhorst, Christian, didn't they turn us down? I don't think it ever got serious with those discussions. The same for the likes of Vieira and Arteta. And I think that's the issue. We went so far down the shopping list, we ended up with Steve Bruce.
Well, I think from what I had heard, Van Bronckhorst was interested, but it was the club that didn't really push it anywhere. Vieira, that was an instance where he turned it down because I think, rightly or wrongly, he saw that there was possibly better or more stable options, let's say, because that's the other problem you've got, is we haven't always been the most stable football club in the last, well, most of the Ashley tenure, let's say. And so that's a difficulty too. Even if you'd gone for someone like Graham Potter, I think he's achievable. I don't believe that Steve Bruce was the best option. And the fact that he was supposedly 11th on that list, I'd be fascinated to see who the other 10 were personally. But that's something I don't think we'll ever get the opportunity to do.
I think he's probably the best option for Ashley's sort of regime, isn't he? He's the one who's just going to roll over and let him do what he wants.
Yeah, I can believe that, which again is another problem that I think we've got inherently, is that the type of coach we're going to attract is someone who either wants an opportunity, a bit like Chris Hughton, who wanted to break into management himself and sort of just looked upon the job and did incredibly well and was actually a really great human being as well, or someone like Alan Pardew, who was desperate for a chance at the top again, so would twist himself into whatever shape he needed to get himself that job.
Let's move on from Pardew, Christian. I'm wondering, is just to bring it back to Almiron and the MLS with having you on the show, is it damaging to the MLS, Almiron coming over here and not contributing any goals and assists? And is that something that American fans might worry about? I remember the similar thing with the Eredivisie, Dutch players who'd been a success in Holland would come over to the Premier League and bomb, and then that league started to get a bad reputation. Are you worried the same is happening here?
Yeah, because it's an interesting time for MLS. They've sold a few young players abroad. Alfonso Davies went to FC Bayern Munich. Tyler Adams went to RB Leipzig. And they've had varying degrees of success, but Almiron is still the big ticket player. He's the record breaker. So I think, yeah, from an MLS perspective, it's disappointing because I don't even think he touched down and people were talking about how it's a retirement league and all. And I can trot out all of the statistics about how it's getting younger. And yes, it's not a top league at the minute, but it's on that way and the scope of scale is quite broad. But unfortunately, if he's not scoring goals, if he's not making assists, which is the two main ways we judge attacking players, it's going to reflect badly on the league, which is a shame because personally, I think there's a lot more nuance to the Almiron discussion than just that. And I think it's far too easy to get bogged down in it.
Yeah, I believe that as well, Christian. I'm actually a big fan of Almiron. I watched him in the MLS. But the big question is, I suppose, the million-dollar question, will he make the grade? I know it's not all about assisting goals, but it would really help Newcastle at the minute. Will he finally get off the mark and can he contribute to this team?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the thing. There was a lot of misinformation at the time he sort of came over. People were talking about a Mesut Ozil. And you'll know, having watched him, he's not Mesut Ozil. I said at the time, he's like Angel Di Maria. He's going to run with the ball and then try and do something at the end of it. So I think it really depends on whether Steve Bruce puts a structure into this side. That's the problem I've got with him, away from comments about the players can't play expansive football and all of that, is like, what's the plan, Steve, essentially? How is this team, and we do this on a fundamental level, how is this team going to get the ball from back to front to create chances? Because at the minute, I'm really not sure what that plan is. And yeah, we're only about 9 games into the Premier League season, so there's still time in theory. But the closer that gets to Christmas and the more you're banking on some second half turnaround, the more pressure that puts on the players and the harder that becomes to achieve, I think.
How do you think Bruce needs to go forward then? What do you think needs to do differently? We've obviously got Dwight Gayle coming back and Carroll is getting some form of fitness. Would you throw Gayle straight in maybe and maybe move Joel in and maybe to the left?
It's an interesting one because you're almost trying to capture the lightning in a bottle that was last season. And so who fills the Perez role? Does Carroll come in and play the Rondon role? Possibly, but his fitness is a little bit questionable.
I think putting Joe Linton out wide, yeah, he's not going to be as mobile as someone like Miguel. But at the same time, it's a role that suits him more, I think, than just playing up top on his own. That's the other problem you've got, is Saint-Maximin wants to be on the left. Almiron works on the left. So you've got two players there that you've spent 20-ish million pounds on, give or take, that play the same position. So that's, to me, that's not great in terms of squad management. I appreciate you need depth, but is that the best way to allocate your funds? I think ultimately what we need is just a bit of time, I guess. I think that's the thing. How do you build an understanding with teammates other than just playing games together? It's a difficult situation for Bruce to be in, I acknowledge, but I think that was sort of the beauty of Benitez's training and all that stuff, is that it went into a lot of detail. It was a lot of repetition, and I imagine it was really quite tough on them mentally at times. But it meant come the second half of the season, everyone knew the roles, and the team, if you look, sort of in his three full seasons, they finished the season stronger as it went on because that fluency came post-Christmas.
Christian, we really appreciate you giving us a little bit of time this evening. It was a real pleasure to have you on. Hopefully we'll get you on again at some point in the season. Christian Hennage there, calling all the way from New York, a real insight into what he thinks is going on this season. Next, we will be talking about Dwight Gale and can he make an impact.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Charlotte Robson from the True Faith podcast. What a debut it is turning out to be from Charlotte, because she was on fine form in the last section. Maybe Newcastle could do with that in their lineup this weekend and a season going forward. I want to quickly talk now, before we get into some of the team, and Dwight Gale that was just mentioned there. Could he make an impact in the season moving forward? But I want to quickly ask Ketch, has there been any Strawberry Place developments? I know there has this week. What is the latest?
Well, there's a Newcastle fan in Southwest London who's probably listening to this, Sean Wade, who's probably one of the most most passionate advocates of this campaign. And I think the latest on it, just to give listeners who might not be familiar with the problem a bit of a background, there's a bit of land outside St James's Park behind the Gallagher End, and the club owned the lease for it. Mike Ashley obviously bought the club 12 years ago, inherited this, and recently he sold it off to another company that I believe was owned by his son-in-law for around about £6 million. Then that was the land was then sold on for a vast profit, around about £9 million. So these figures might not be massively accurate, but it was sold again for another profit that the club didn't see. And this is all perfectly legal, by the way. And the problem with selling this land is that it prevents us from extending St James's Park. We can't extend the East Stand because there's a list of buildings. And so that's not an option. So the only option is to go and extend the Gallagher End. So it's obviously not necessarily something we want to do right now, you know, when we're not getting capacity for some of the lesser games. But it's the disconnection from ambition that if we sell this land, we won't be able to extend the stadium, and we'll be stuck at the capacity that we've got, which is just over 50,000. So it's obviously disappointing that the land has been sold, and now there's planning application to build it into a student halls of residence. Newcastle's got two universities. There's halls of residences all over the city, and then there's always a need for these. So they want to turn it into halls of residences, and there's an opportunity for people to protest if they don't want this to happen. And obviously this naturally would lend Newcastle fans to step in at this point and object, because it landlocks a cultural beacon of the region, Newcastle United. This is one city with one football club. It's been going since 1892, and even as Newcastle East End since the late 19th century. So there's a lot of history there, and to disconnect it from the ambition and prevent us from ever extending St James's Park would be hugely disappointing. And lots of people have been stepping in to protest, and one of which is Chion Wura, who is the MP for Newcastle. She's lodged an objection. And the biggest issue for me is Sean Wade, who's on this show. He does a fantastic job shouting about this, because it is something we should be trying to stop going ahead. We don't want to lose the opportunity to realise our potential. And the maddest thing for me is we've got a fan base of probably, you know, 500,000 fans actively supporting Newcastle United around the world. Only about 1,000 people have stepped in to object. So I'm asking Newcastle fans, what are you doing? You know, you need to get your head out your backside and step in and do something about this. And it's not easy to object What you need to do is you need to go on the Newcastle Council's website. You need to register. You need to comment and you need to object. And it's very important in the objection that you don't go, oh, we shouldn't build on this line because of Mike Ashley. That's not what we're about. We're protecting the future of Newcastle United. It's got nothing to do with Mike Ashley, although he is selling the land. Don't bring Mike Ashley into this. This is about a disconnect from ambition of a cultural icon that is Newcastle United. We want this club to realise its potential. It isn't doing that. It hasn't done that since the 90s. So I think it's time for fans to step in and do something, and fans will be aware of this, but they need to actually act and go on the council's website, register and object, because before we know it, they'll be knocking the land down and building the halls of residence.
Well, perfectly put by Ketch there. Please help in that fight. Go on the council's website and objectify to that. And also, what do you think about it? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Let's talk about matters on the pitch now, because a lot has been made. Can Dwight Gale come back into the team? Is he someone you want to even come back into the team at all? He's found himself on the fringes of the team, if not wanted by the team at all now. There might be a chance for him, Charlotte. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel good. I think he got a few minutes against Chelsea. It was nice to see him back on the pitch. I think he can bring a bit of pace and a bit more urgency to the side. I do think, though, I said this recently, that people on social media and stuff are saying, oh, well, Gale, we're missing Richie. Once we've got them back, it's all going to be fine. Well, I think we need to be careful with our hopes there. I mean, I'm very optimistic anyway, as a person, about this football club for my sins, but I don't think they're the messiah here. It is good to have options. It's good to have good people competing on the bench for spots in the starting 11, and to have them on the bench, having that can't be a bad thing, especially not with a player like Dwight Gale, who was being looked at by other clubs, and probably now that he's getting game time will be again in January. He's probably going to go in January. Yeah, I just think we need to be careful with sort of thinking that pinning all our hopes on that.
Yeah, I think Charlotte's right, maybe clutching at straws. Newcastle need goals, they need creativity. They want Richie back, they want Dwight Gale playing. I feel Dwight Gale is not criminally underrated, but he is underrated. People say he's a championship goal scorer. Can he do it week in, week out in the Premier League? There is a question we need to see answers from, but I do believe he can score goals. He certainly injects the pace that Charlotte mentioned there, Aaron.
Yeah, I think it's quite a lazy sort of a piece of analysis to say he is just a championship striker, because obviously before he signed for Newcastle, he did quite well in a Palace team, which is famous for not getting goals. I think obviously the only reason people say he's so good in the championship is how well he did with us down there. I mean, and there's no doubt if he had went to Leeds and West Brom, the clubs that were sniffing around him in the summer, I think they would probably go up under him. He is just a very, very good striker. I agree with Charlotte. I don't think that, you know, his return should be something that is massively celebrated and seen as the massive turning point in our season, because before he got injured or before the season started, he was always going to probably be an understudy anyway. I don't think anybody expected him to be our, you know, leading striker for the season. So, look, I'm glad he's back. It's another option for one. Two, we need goals. So I would, you know, stick him in there and really give him a good run. Whether that means dropping Jolinton or not, I'm not sure. But it can only be a good thing. But I agree, I don't think it's the turning point.
Maybe not dropping him, maybe playing him together. Carroll's in the mix now, he's getting full fitness. Ketchy's shaking his head. He's always shaking his head. I'm always scared what Ketchy's going to say. Charlotte, you got to get used to this. What do you make of it, Ketch?
I don't want to see Gale in the wow, starting lineup. I think I'm happy with the effort and the performances of the front three. What I'm not happy with is the supply. And yeah. I want these three to get time. I want Sir Maximum to get minutes and build up his match fitness. I want to see Joe Linton get chances and see if he can put them away. And I want Almiron to break his duck. I want to see those three. I think we've bought them.
But the longer that goes on, Ketch, and if they don't do it, then the calls will only start to grow.
We don't have the luxury of time.
But put Gale in there. He's not going to get the ball either. The system we're playing out at the minute. Gale, for me, has had his chance with us. He does well in the Championship. He had a chance with us in the Premier League last season. His injury record is a bit...
Oh, he's calling him that Championship goal scorer, Aaron. Look, he's just doing it now.
That's what he is. I mean, ooh, that's what we've seen. He needs a...
Lazy, he said. This was lazy analysis.
If there's a European breakaway league, Gale will excel in the league, the middle league between the Championship and the Premier League. Gale...
Can't wait for the Wolves preview.
Do you know what I'd do with
the 2-0 Newcastle? Gale gets both.
We've still got... I think Bruce likes Gale. He tried to sign him when he was at Villa. We've still got two opportunities to bring in domestic loans. personally, I would let Gail go out on loan and get another striker in January.
Aaron.
I don't agree
he's
with
shot, Ketch. He can't even get out his words, Ketch. This is what you've done to the man.
I think I do get Ketch's point about giving the front three type
don't
of gel.
Backtrack.
I am going to get onto my point because we've spent a lot of money on them. But like we've said, it isn't working. And I think we need to try something new. And I think Gale could easily slot into that team and suddenly find a little bit of a connection with them. And if he gets a run of goals and a run of like games under his belt, he could end up out of, even though I've just said he's not the turning point, he could end up, you know, changing the season. I think sticking with this front three that hasn't worked, there needs to be closer together, and the way they're playing at the minute, it just isn't going to solve the problem. So, and I rate Dwight Gale quite glad. I'm glad he didn't go in the summer, and I wouldn't loan him out, and I'd keep him.
Division amongst the ranks.
And it's weird because I think it's the first time I've ever disagreed with Ketch. But yeah.
Is this the end of the bromance? Because this is more maybe important than Football Matters.
This is great for the show.
Yeah, it's 1-1, Charlotte. Who are you going to give the deciding votes? Who do you agree with Aaron? Do you agree with Ketch?
I'm not sending Gale out on loan. We just don't have enough options. That's crazy.
No, but get another loan in.
Okay.
Ketch.
I think there's better out there.
I've never seen Ketch lose.
Who would you bring in?
That's a good question. And I think, I don't know, just someone from one of the bigger clubs that isn't getting minutes, and maybe even European, but I just don't get Gale, not for me. He's had his chance. Suspect injury record, bit lightweight. I'd rather the front three gel and get a chance. And
I mean, that is the ideal. Obviously, I would rather that as well. I think it's just, I don't think I would see Gale starting, but having him on the bench as an option, if we're really struggling for pace or getting the ball up the pitch, I think is... It's there, isn't it? We didn't have it before.
There's something there with these three, though. I think our fans really could get on board with this front three if they played and got going. That there's pace and power and excitement, and I want to see it happen. Basically, but they need to get higher up the pitch.
How much impact are the Newcastle fans expecting of Carroll, or how much impact can he make, Charlotte? Realistically.
So I was realistic.
Deep breath.
Realistically, okay. I mean,
Aaron's shaking his head. We're already on the debate.
Not much. Like I really like him. I like seeing how happy he is to be back.
Isn't it nice sentiment?
But you know, that's the thing, isn't it? That's what it was done for. It's this sort of PR-y thing, and Carroll's, you know, he's not a bad player, but he's riddled with injury. He's like 30 now. I don't think he's gonna sort of turn our season around. Well, he hasn't. He's played, you know, he's not really didn't make much of an impact at all on Saturday against Chelsea. I mean, it would be a nice fairy tale, wouldn't it, if he came back to his home club and he ended up being the top goal scorer this season and keeping us out of relegation. But that is just so unrealistic. And if you look at him, it's not going to happen.
He just looks worryingly immobile to me. Very, very immobile. And that's not what we need at the minute. I mean, I know, fair enough, you get him on for the last 10 and you lump balls up to him. I don't really want us to have to resort to that. But if we do, and we probably will, the lack of goals, I think that's what he's best used for. I don't want to see
just
him starting.
Just think of Dwight Gale just getting onto those balls, latching onto them. Aaron, the eyes lit up there, Ketch. Wouldn't that be a lovely sight?
Well, that's the idea, isn't it? You get the ball up to Carroll and you get bodies around him, whoever's still got the legs to stay on the pitch, because St Maximum can't do 90 minutes at the minute, and Almiron is similarly can't keep up that energy. So you are going to need Gale and Carroll to come on, and it's just getting it right. And I think with Carroll coming on, you need people like Matt Ritchie. You need deliveries into the box. Mm. So Matt Ritchie coming back is a big one. Gale, not so much for me.
Not so much. Well, it is Wolves on a weekend, although it could be good for Newcastle because they play on Thursday, so they've got another game. They might not be as fresh as Newcastle. We're going to be previewing that game next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Charlotte Robson from the True Faith podcast. It's been a good show. There was a little bit of a debate. Aaron and Ketch, they didn't even look at each other in the break. It was really... Me and Charlotte were getting worried. You know, the bromance could be over. I'm just kidding. Of course, they are the best of friends on this show, debating whether Dwight Gale can make an impact. Can he make an impact on the weekend? Because...
Newcastle play Wolves in what is a big game, but Wolves are in action tomorrow night now in the Europa League, so it's a quick turnaround for them. Newcastle hopefully have already been preparing for Wolves. They'll be watching the game tomorrow. Someone joining us now, and he'll know more about it, is James Fielden, who is actually out. They're playing Bratislava. He is there at the game. James, what can you tell us about Wolves tomorrow night and the team that will play Newcastle on the weekend?
Evening, guys. Well, it's hard to say exactly because we don't know what team will play tomorrow. You know, Wolves have got a couple of injuries, but generally it'll be a strong team because they've got Slovan Bratislava in back-to-back games now in the Europa League. And having lost their first group game, they won in Besiktas and they need some more wins to qualify. So it'll be a strong team here. But as they showed before the international break, you know, they won away at Besiktas and followed that up on the Sunday with a win at Manchester City. So anything's possible, really.
What out of your next, obviously the games are coming thick and fast now. Is the Newcastle game the priority, would you say, and then in looking at your next four?
Priority, I wouldn't necessarily say so. I mean, they've got a League Cup game the following Wednesday. That's probably bottom of the list, I'd say, away at Aston Villa, even though it's a local derby. I mean, they really need a win in this Europa League game tomorrow night. So that's the immediate concern. And I think they'll see what, you know, availability they've got in terms of squads after that to go forward. But Wolves are in a season now where they just need to pick up points. You know, there's no bones about it. They want to make a go of the Europa League and try and get progress in that because they're trying to build the club and make them noticeable on the European stage. So, you know, that's the immediate concern. And as long as they stay up in the Premier League, they don't really mind where they finish in the table. So, you know, it was a poor result against Southampton at the weekend, really, given how they'd been doing. But Wolves have got to keep picking up points here and there. And I think they'd quite happily take a point in Newcastle on Sunday, to be honest.
How would you assess their start of the season? Because obviously last year, you know, Wolves were so, you know, fantastic, you know, probably the biggest club outside the top six. It was a bit of a slow start and then they've sort of started to pick up again. What's the sort of feeling around the club now? And are they sort of saying we'll sacrifice Prem success this season if, you know, we can get far in the Europa League?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they want to get far in the Europa League, and as long as they're not engulfed in a relegation battle come, you know, the back end of March, coming into April, I don't think they'll mind. You know, they had a pre-season all over the place, really. They didn't play any domestic friendlies at all. They were out in China, won the Premier League Asia Trophy, and then had all of these qualifiers to play in the Europa League to get to the group stage. You know, they went to play Crusaders in Northern Ireland. They went all the way to Punic in Armenia. And then they played Torino as well. So they had all these games travelling all over the place. And the first few weeks of the season, they were playing Thursday, Saturday football and they weren't quite up to speed. You know, they've got so many Portuguese internationals as well who'd been playing in the Nations League over the summer. So it's a number of factors, really. And they were just a bit sluggish to start with. And, you know, they were getting success in Europe, but not domestically. One of the main changes from a Wolves point of view is that they've been changing formation. If you remember when they got promoted from the Championship, they played 3-4-3 and it was all about the combination between the two wide forwards and the wing-backs that got them in behind so many times and created so many chances. But that success last season was all built on the fact that they'd changed formation in early December to a 3-5-2 and were just a staunch counter-attacking side.
James,
with Diogo Jota and Jimenez. So yes, just to sum up is that, you know, they've changed formation again in this at the start of this season and they seem to be playing 3-4-3 against the sides that are deemed weaker, so it kind of depends what formation they play on Sunday as to how it goes, really.
And we still don't really know what to expect of Wolves because obviously it's an indifferent start to the season, but then just before the international break they went away to Turkey, got that 93rd minute winner 1-0 away to Besiktas, then they went to the Etihad, beat the champions 2-0. They've not started the international break the best, obviously drawing with Southampton, but Nuno isn't the biggest fan of rotating his side. He likes to play with the same 11, so that could play into Newcastle's hands on the weekend. It's a quick turnaround. They might not be the freshest. Could Newcastle get something out of the game on the weekend?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, Wolves pride themselves on their sports science and their recovery. Tim Spears did a really good piece in The Athletic recently about how they turned around from that game at Besiktas to Manchester City. But Nuno likes to work with quite a small core squad. He wants everyone to be involved. No one on the fringes, you know, everyone who's basically fit and available is in the matchday squad, supplemented by, you know, academy players here and there. So, yeah, certainly a chance for Newcastle if they can put a decent game plan together. But, you know, Nuno prides himself on his back line and plays a back five, so they're pretty tough to break down.
James, as Newcastle fans, we're quite envious, really, of what Wolves are doing. Mm. Big transfer fees, big players coming in. What's the overall plan for the club? Like, there's these big players coming in. I know Mendes is involved. Is it a stepping stone club? Is there plans to sell these players on at profit? Or are Wolves seriously trying to establish themselves as a European heavyweight?
They want to establish themselves, but I don't think they're under any illusions that at the same time that, you know, that big six is almost impossible to crack. So they want to build the club up as much as they can. But, you know, all the players that did so well last season, for one reason or another, there weren't really too many prospects of them moving on. Quite a lot of the foreign guys who'd come in seemed pretty grounded at the club and were quite happy with where they were. You know, others like João Moutinho had just come into English football, probably wasn't ready to move on immediately. They got rid of Costa and Cavaleiro in the summer. But yeah, they're trying to build it up slowly but surely. They've got a lot of money to spend, but are obviously restricted somewhat by FFP. You know, in terms of commercial income, they still really haven't got that much compared to the big clubs. So it's kind of a slow but sure progress for them. And as you say, yeah, Mendes is involved and anything almost is possible. So, you know, players like João Moutinho just come out of nowhere sometimes, and Wolves fans are very glad to have him.
Hi, James. It's Charlotte. I am the only girl in the studio, so yes, it is. That's obviously. I'm wondering what your prediction would be for the score on Sunday. Obviously, you're going to be hopefully a little bit tired from this week. I'm hoping this goes in our favour.
Sorry, can you just repeat the question?
Yes.
Trout just pulled by exactly as you said that.
So that's all right. It's tough being in Europe. I can't imagine it. I wondered what your prediction was for the score on Sunday.
I'd probably go 1-1. I think.
Okay.
As frustrating as it might be from a Wolves point of view and probably a Newcastle point of view, Wolves would settle for it. And I think we've seen so far that Newcastle, I mean, Almiron's been the strange one from an outsider's point of view, hasn't really fired as many people expected him to. And it seems like the reports on Joe Ellington haven't been as positive as hoped for either. So in an attacking sense, Wolves would probably hope that they haven't got enough there to hurt them. But they're always susceptible to conceding one or two. And, you know, they've got enough firepower to score at the other end, and Traore suddenly come into his own as well. So 1-1's probably a fair shout.
James, I think we're going to take that score in the studio, but we hope you enjoy your European trip. I think we all wish we was there with you, so enjoy the game tomorrow night, and we'll speak to you soon. James Fielding there, football commentator and Wolves fan. He went for a 1-1. Ketch, I'll start with you. A, what is your score prediction? And B, how do you think the game will play out?
Low scoring game. I think we'll lose by one.
Ooh, score?
0-1.
Neil, okay, very low scoring game, lose by 1-0. So James said 1-1, you'd be happy with that?
I think it'll be a tight game. Wolves have got a good record at St James's Park. I think they've drawn two the last four games, so tight game. I think it'll be a gallant defeat. Newcastle will show glimpses but not come away with anything. I'm not confident, unfortunately.
Aaron?
I think it'll be quite similar to Brighton. I don't think we'll have much of the ball, despite the fact we're at home. I think we'll be sat defending for a lot of the game with not much attacking on the front foot. But I think Dwight Gayle will come on and score the winner.
Wow.
Yes.
89th minute to make it 1-0.
Wow.
That's my prediction. So
Charlotte.
Same scoreline, different teams. I'm going to go with our Wolves commentator. I'm going to say 1-1. I think we'll get a point. I'm hoping we get a goal. I think we won't have much of the ball. I think we will sit quite deep. We'll defend heavily, but I'm hoping we can get the ball up the pitch, presumably using Dwight Gayle to get it there. Catch his face.
They're doing it to wind you up. I won't go for a Gayle prediction, but I do think Newcastle will get a result against Wolves on the weekend. I'm going to say Newcastle, they've not been, getting the goals this season, but I'm going to say they get two on the weekend. They beat Wolves 2-1, and I don't think they'll sit back. I think in terms of possession, Newcastle might just be in this. Call me crazy, who knows? But you can join us at the same time every Wednesday, 7 to 8, on the Newcastle Fan Show, and we want you to join us. We will see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.